You're listening to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. And one of the most visible fighters for those children of Flint is here with us now, Dr. Mona Hanna-Attisha. Her research into blood lead levels in the children forced state officials to accept that their cost-cutting decision had indeed poisoned the water and those who drank it. Dr. Mona, welcome back to Stateside.
Cynthia, it's always great to talk to you.
Take us back for a moment. What's your first memory of realizing something was wrong with the water in Flint? What images can you not get out of your mind?
Yeah, you know, it was the images of those moms holding brown water in jugs at, you know, town hall meetings and different community events and being repeatedly dismissed and denied. You know, that's when this crisis should have ended. Obviously, this crisis never should have started, but it should have ended within those first couple months after our water was switched, when people were in the amazing, heroic people of Flint realized something was wrong with the water. But unfortunately, they were really discredited throughout.
How have the last 5 years felt for you?
You know, my involvement really came late in the game. So if you think of like the uncovering of the water crisis as a series of dominoes, I was one of those last dominoes. It started with the people of Flint who knew something was wrong and they were loud and they were organized and they were trying to draw attention. Then we had amazing journalists who got involved. The EPA whistleblower, Miguel Del Toro, Mark Edwards from Virginia Tech. I mean, there was a series of folks who were raising red flags and alarm bells that something was wrong. My involvement didn't happen for maybe a year and a half after the water switch. In the summer of 2015, when I heard about the possibility of lead in the water, and that should have ended the crisis too. When you know lead in water, you know, you don't have to prove harm. My research never should have been necessary, especially when we know what lead does. So my involvement didn't really happen until a year and a half, and I regret every single day that I didn't get involved earlier.
And we should remind folks, it was September 2015 when you released your study proving kids in Flint did have elevated blood lead levels, despite the state's reassurances that everything's all right, nothing to see here. And they pushed back hard on you at first. Do you have any lingering feelings over that dispute?
No. My constituency is children. As a pediatrician, my work is to make sure that that the needs of kids are being heard and that we are doing whatever we need to do for kids. So I, you know, people can go after me as much as they want, but they can't go after my kids. I don't care about apologies or, retaliation, any of that. My interests are making sure that the children of Flint will not only recover but thrive. And that's how I spend my day.
And where do you feel, here we are 5 years later, where do you feel Flint and its people, especially these children, are? What's better and what isn't?
Yeah, so we have really, you know, turned this crisis on its heels. And we have put into place really a model public health program to make sure that our kids have that brightest future possible. You know, yeah, the story of Flint is the story of a crime committed with absolute indifference to some of the most vulnerable people in our country. But it is also a story, and this is what we repeatedly want to share. It is a story of how everyday people, moms and activists and pastors and journalists and scientists and students and doctors came together to fight for children and to build something that will make the future of Flint kids brighter than really it ever was. So for Flint kids right now, you know, we have brand new child care centers, expansion of home visiting programs, breastfeeding services, home visiting programs, school health services, a massive expansion of early literacy and Medicaid. The list kind of goes on and on of what we've been able to put in place to mitigate the impact of this crisis. We can't take this crisis away, but there is a lot that we have been doing to make sure that our Flint kids will thrive. And the neatest thing that's happened is that communities outside of Flint are paying attention, and there's these incredible ripple effects, not only in regards to safety of our drinking water, but really fundamentally how we care for children. And that has been totally awesome.
And certainly this has presented an opportunity, A, to help, continue helping people in Flint, B, to increase public health knowledge to be shared with everyone. So talk about the Pediatric Health Initiative. You're the director, and what are you monitoring, and how much have you learned?
Yeah, so our pediatric public health initiative was established shortly after the crisis to be that model public health program, you know, a center of excellence to do everything we can, working with hand in hand with community partners and children of Flint and parents to flip the story for Flint kids. So we are doing all kinds of different things. And I think the biggest project that we've undertaken is the Flint Registry. So this is funded by the Centers for Disease Control, the CDC. It is a massive community-informed registry where we are identifying folks who are exposed to the crisis, seeing how they're doing, and most importantly, getting them connected to the services to promote their health and development. We've already had about 6,000 people start that enrollment process. About 400-ish have already completed enrollment into the Flint Registry. And most importantly, hundreds of folks have been referred to the services like childcare, like Medicaid, like neurodevelopmental assessment to make sure that they're okay and have what they need. So this registry is modeled after things like the World Trade Center Registry and other kind of big public health registries that have been put in place often after crises to make sure to see how the people are doing, but most importantly, to improve their health and development.
And we should note on this fifth anniversary, the Flint Registry is signing up people in five locations until 8 this evening. And all you have to do is call 833-GO-FLINT to get details. Dr. Mona, as you continue monitoring Flint's children, what still keeps you up at night?
Oh, there's so many things that keep me up at night. And I think the most pressing thing is the long-term recovery. All those awesome things I talked about that we're doing for Flint kids, from early literacy to Medicaid expansion to home visiting programs, those are all time-limited in funding, either from the state or the federal government or from philanthropy. And it's a lot of my work is continuing to ensure that we have the resources to do this work, because this is long-term work. So that's what keeps me up at night is, are we, you know, it's constantly writing more grants, continuing the advocacy to remind folks that our work is long-term work.
And your book, What the Eyes Don't See, certainly tells the story. It was chosen by the New York Times for its 100 Notable Books of 2018 and just selected as the Great Michigan Read for 2019. So you're going to reach more people to share your take on what happened. Let's say that you and I are talking on the 10th anniversary of the start of all of this. What do you hope to be able to tell us?
Well, I'm going to put it in my calendar because we are going to talk on that 10th anniversary. And I look forward to sharing with you in a very kind of academic, data-driven way what we've been able to do for Flint children, how this story wasn't a story of a crisis, but really a story of incredible recovery and hope. And that is kind of the data and the stories that I look forward to sharing with you.
One quick question. Do you drink the water from the tap in Flint today?
I do. I drink filtered water from the tap. My day is consumed with coffee, which is made of water in Flint, and it's all filtered water.
Dr. Mona Hannah-Attisha, always a pleasure. Thank you.
Likewise.